The Los Angeles County Department of Public Health piloted a universal screening protocol at our 12 STD clinics among men who have sex with men to determine if it resulted in more gonorrhea and chlamydia diagnoses. To give you some background of gonorrhea and chlamydia in Los Angeles County, we had 17,000 reported cases in 2015 for gonorrhea and 56,000 chlamydia cases in 2015. Gonorrhea and chlamydia cases have been rising in LA County, and we had a 15% increase from 2014 for gonorrhea and a 4% increase from 2014 for chlamydia. 8% of our reported gonorrhea cases came from our LA County STD clinics, and 3% of our chlamydia cases came from our LA County, reported chlamydia cases came from LA County STD clinics. And as many of you may know, several studies have suggested that a large proportion of gonorrhea and chlamydia infections would be missed with urogenital screening only. Studies estimate that about 53 to 85% of chlamydia infections and 64 to 77% of gonorrhea infections would be missed with screening at the urogenital site only. And just as a reminder of the current CDC screening guidelines for gonorrhea and chlamydia among MSM, the recommendation is to screen at least annually at sites of sexual contact, the urethra, rectum, and pharynx, regardless of condom use. And more frequently for MSM who are at risk, higher risk, with screening every 3 to 6 months. And based on these recommendations, screening is based on patient-reported. And so we did some preliminary analysis, and we compared the positivity rate between gonorrhea cases at the anorectal site and the pharyngeal site, and we saw that 10% of cases that did not report anal receptive sex were positive for gonorrhea at the anorectal site, and 7.5% of pharyngeal gonorrhea cases were positive, compared to 12.4% of those that reported giving oral sex. So based on these preliminary analyses, the Department of HIV and STD programs released a recommendation for opt-out universal screening at all anatomic sites for chlamydia and gonorrhea for all MSM seen at the 12 DPH STD clinics. Screening was done for chlamydia at the urogenital and anorectal site, and for gonorrhea at the urogenital, anorectal, and oropharyngeal site. CME training was given in February 2015. And our study objective was to determine if there was an increase in the proportion of MSM visits with a gonorrhea or chlamydia diagnosis during the 6 months following the recommendation compared to the 6 months of the previous year. Our STD clinic database was used to identify MSM patients with a new visit during the pre- and post-recommendation periods. The pre-recommendation period was between February 2014 and August 2014. Our post-recommendation period was between February 2015 and August 2015. The analysis we performed, we first calculated the percent of MSM visits screened at all anatomic sites pre- and post-recommendation overall and for the individual clinics. We then grouped the individual clinics into three categories based on their level of increase in universal screening, post versus pre-recommendation, and the groups were SD clinics had greater than 5% increase, they were grouped, and then 1 to 5% increase, and then a no increase decrease group. We compare the changes post versus pre-recommendation and for gonorrhea and chlamydia diagnosis across the clinic grouping, and looked at the percent of chlamydia and gonorrhea diagnosis and ran a multivariate logistic regression. And we saw that overall there was an increase in universal screening between the pre and post period by 6.5 percentage points. And when you look between the 12 clinics, there's a large variation between the clinics. And six clinics were grouped in the greater than 5% increase group. 1 to 5% increase group had about four clinics. And in the no increase or decrease group, there were two clinics. And when you look at the positivity rate for gonorrhea and chlamydia diagnosis across the three groups, in the group that had a greater than 5% increase, there was an increase of 5.1 percentage points. In the group with a 1 to 5% increase, there was about 0.9 percentage points. And in the no increase decrease group, there's far fewer gonorrhea and chlamydia diagnosis in the post-recommendation period versus the pre-recommendation period. So on logistic regression, we use interaction terms between the post-recommendation and clinic improvement, and we controlled for age, race, ethnicity, HIV status, and the clinic's universal screening during the pre-recommendation time period. And there was a significant, our interaction was significant, suggesting that the recommendation varied across the clinic improvements. So our opt-out universal chlamydia and gonorrhea screening appears to be effective at identifying additional infections among MSM. Further evaluation on the challenges and barriers to universal screening in the STD clinics is needed. And future work focused on assessing the cost per case identified under the new screening algorithm should be done. These are my references, and thank you.
Thank you, Chantel. Mm-hmm. I will invite people to the microphone for questions.
Hi, Harold Weisenfeld from Pittsburgh. That was very lovely. Thank you. Could you describe more specifically what the opt-out strategy was? What was the wording or the training that you used among the staff? And then can you interpret why it worked better in some clinics than others? Do you have any insight as to whether the populations were different or whether this was a staff-related variable in implementing this opt-out strategy?
So for your second question, we haven't looked at that, but that's something that we are going to look at, why some clinics, the uptake for the recommendation was better than others. And I'm sorry, your first question.
What exactly was the opt-out strategy? Can you articulate how the staff pitched opt-out? Was there a standard script?
No, there was no standard script. So I think if a patient just decided that they did not want to be screened, they had the option for that.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks. This microphone is very low.
Yeah.
I'll just bend over. I'm Kyle Bernstein at CDC. That's a great presentation. I really congratulate you on doing a really nice, robust program evaluation. My question was about, during the implementation period, was the finding about the high positivity in rectal and pharyngeal sites among those who did not self-report exposure at those sites the same as what you found during the pilot period?
Sorry. I'm going to go back to that slide. So this was just during the pre-recommendation period, and so I'm sorry, can you ask me?
So I just want to know, is once you did the opt-out screening, did you find the same types of results on those without self-reported exposure at rectal or pharyngeal
sites? Oh, we haven't looked at that.
Okay.
That's a good idea. We should look at that.
Hi, I'm Abby Norris-Turner from Ohio State. I was wondering, well, two questions. One, these issues around behavioral self-report being used to target screening is, of course, also an issue for women and extragenital testing. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious if you have any thoughts about the application of opt-out testing in certain settings for women. And my second question is how people were identified as MSM to sort of go into this opt-out category. So if we're sort of walking away from behavioral self-report as a way to indicate risk, how was it even restricted, for example, to MSM? How did you identify people as MSM?
Okay. Yeah, so we, on our STD clinic intake form, we asked the question of whether who their sexual partners were in the last 3 months and the last 12 months, and then that's how we identify them as MSM.
Hi, Tom Peterman from STD Prevention at CDC. It seemed like your opt-out, I mean, you had a statistically significant increase, but it seemed really disappointing to me that it wasn't a much greater. That it seemed like if you go to opt-out and people are really told that we're going to do this unless you say no, it would be much higher than that. And I'm wondering if you actually looked to see how it was being operationalized or what happened that it didn't go up by more than that.
Yeah. So the SD, we can only make recommendations and we can't, you know, really enforce that, you know, they do the screening the way we are, follow our recommendations as we ask. So, yeah, I don't have really an answer for you. But that's a good point. We should look into that further.
We have time for one more question if there's anybody has any other question in the room. Otherwise, I will exercise the right, and I will take one more question. On the, if you can go to, I think it's slide number 8, where you have all the sites. Have you?
All the.
Yeah, that one. Okay. Have you? Do you know if the patients are different or the clients are different among sites? I mean, maybe that's why the cluster. Have you ever actually put that component in your regression or? I mean, different risks. They're risker or not risker?
No, we did not look. That's our next step. That's what we plan on looking at. But
yeah, because that could be a determining factor. Okay, great.
Thank you.
Now, thank you so much, Chantal.